Pathway Studios in Johnston proper. You are live from the path.
And you're listening to Live from the Path. We're coming from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. Hey, you know what I decided?
No.
I'm over Booba.
Yeah.
I've had enough.
Here's the thing. This never happens to you, Ben, because you never miss the show, right?
Yeah.
But, like, sometimes I will miss the show for a week, and it'll pop up in my podcast. I'm like, I don't know. I wasn't on it. I don't even know if I'm going to listen to
it. I'm not going
to
take it in.
So, I mean, it's 50-50. Booba's done listening to the show anyway.
Okay. Hey, if you're anybody but Booba, you're listening to Live from the Path. thanks for hanging out with us tonight. So here's the deal. I was scouring the news sites to look for something to talk about. And so here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to tell you I got three. No, I got one.
Hey, man.
What you got?
We should take a quiz.
Yeah, okay. Oh, all right, so here's what we'll do. Well, I'm going to give you. Okay, we're going to go through one article, and then we're going to do a quiz, and then we'll do some advice on Dear Life in the Path, and we're going to send you on your way.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right, this looks good. All right. So here was the big. Nathaniel's in the studio with us tonight. Nathaniel.
Hey.
Okay, good.
Strong opener.
Yeah.
That's a great beginning. Yeah. Flag that tape.
It was bold. I can't think of it. It's kind of had to have been 4 or 5 years last time we had Nathaniel on the air, yeah. Right?
It's been a minute.
Yeah, okay. All right, it's been a while. Anyway, welcome.
Hold on. That's the same shirt.
Yeah, I think it has been.
Gross.
Okay, article from Christian Post. Is this God's super sign of the end times?
Yes. I love this already.
Here's what I'm going to tell you. This is really amped up. I mean, over the last, however many years, 100, people are like, hey, it's a sign of the end times. It's a sign of the end times.
Yeah, yeah.
Not this cat. He says, look, this is the super sign.
This is one above.
Of which I have no familiarity with. Like, I can't even tie anything to scripture that says there's such thing as a super sign.
Like, a red moon or something. It'd be like a super sign.
They were just calling that the stars. Sign. Anyway, let's see what it says.
I mean, here's the thing. You're part of, there's not been one generation since Christ has left the earth that people have not figured that their generation is the generation where the end of times is going.
Kind of, we're supposed to.
I mean,
that's kind of the idea.
Single generation goes, I'm calling it right now.
I mean,
this is the deal.
Paul had to tell the guys in Thessalonica, they're like, hey, we missed it. He's like, no, you didn't miss it.
It's coming. It's coming. But be ready. That's the problem is we won't be ready if we're like looking for some far off thing. I think we should always, it's healthy to think it's any day. But it's weird when you start looking for super signs.
I suppose it's healthy to live as if it's any day, but to anticipate it or try to call it as if it's...
That gets weird. Yeah, right, yeah, yeah.
Then
looking
you've
for crossed, signs and...
Yeah, you've
and
crossed the line.
There is a sign. Jesus said he's coming back.
Yeah.
That's what else do you need?
I don't think you're going to miss that one. Go ahead, Ben.
All right. Let's talk to author Jeff Kinley.
I mean, can you imagine the size of this trumpet? I mean...
I've often wanted to know. Yeah, what's that trumpet? I mean, is it really like a trumpet?
So we were talking about this at church, a couple 3 weeks ago. We were talking about, remember when Jesus fed the 5,000, the first time, I think.
And I wasn't there.
Okay. So you vaguely heard of the story.
Yeah.
So we were talking about, did they cook the fish? Or did it just, you figure the kid brought two raw fish or some fish and some loaves or whatever, and then Jesus prays, and then that's it. It multiplies. And we're sitting there to be like, I don't know, did it automatically cook two when he multiplied it? And then all of a sudden someone texts me, they were watching on a live stream, and they go, Jesus does not cook bad meals. Like, oh, right, okay. I didn't think of it that way.
Sorry.
So it stands to reason that, let's say a trumpet is involved. That is the best trumpet ever made. Like, yeah. of the highest quality. Like, two Vulcane folks are making it. I mean, it is really something.
who's a good trumpet player? I mean, like, was it...
I mean...
Phil Drisco was a big trumpet guy.
I mean, Louis Armstrong took on
Louis Armstrong.
Wynton Marsalis.
Wynton Marsalis was a good trumpet player, yeah. He's still living.
I need to be listening to some of that so I can be ready.
Yeah, yeah. So you can pick it up, yeah. Who was the guy... Michael, who was the... We saw him in concert. He was like a jazz dude. Look like he's probably eating meatballs all the time.
Meatball jazz man.
Yeah. I mean, is he coming to mind?
Did he have gray hair?
Yeah.
Boo. I know who you're talking about.
Okay, it doesn't matter.
Gray-haired meatball Italian jazz band.
All right.
Yeah, I got it.
Author Jeff Kinley.
Bernie something.
Yeah. Believes the Bible lays out some fascinating circumstances that will unfold as humanity marches toward the biblical end times, in quotes. But there's one sign in particular that Kinley, author of the new book, Interview with the Antichrist, believes has already unfolded. What do you think it is? You could probably smell this.
Interview with the Antichrist.
Yeah.
Probably something to do with Israel or something.
Dan votes something to do with Israel, Mike.
I'm going to say it just like Dan. Something to do with Israel.
Hey, don't mock me.
I'll say Russia.
Okay, Russia.
It has something to do with Russia.
Russia's the new Israel.
Okay.
Israel.
All right. Oh, yeah, this is going to go over well. So it's the Jews or the Ruskies. Unfolded, he says, the reemergence of Israel.
Yeah.
Oh, there it goes. Dan nailed it.
I feel like I get a point. I need a trumpet.
He explained the development while telling the Pure Flix podcast why he is so intrigued by eschatology. He says, part of it is the sense of knowing that we are living in the last days with Israel being reborn as a nation. That's really God's super sign, he said. There's so many things that are happening almost daily around the world that it's almost like you have to be living under a rock not to notice it.
Just so we can parse this out, and this will help, Ben. When it comes to eschatology, when people say we're living in the final days, when the Bible talks about the final days, it actually only talks about 2 days. It talks about the past days and the final days. When Jesus says, or the Bible refers to, you're living in the times, the end times, there was all the times, all the times, all the times. Stop, and from everything on the way out is end times.
Right.
And the stop point was around Jesus' time.
Yeah.
And so anything past Jesus is considered the end times. So it didn't freshly, if you need a healthy way to look at it, it's not like the thought of end times started like 100 years ago or back in 1500 or whatever.
1948.
Like when the Bible, when we biblically refer to end times, it's everything past Jesus. Because that's how,
ascension.
That's how the Bible refers to it. You are living in the end of days, which is everything from here on out. Okay, continue.
Yeah, exactly. And so, let's see. He also addressed... Well, hold on. What was the last thing he said? I missed it.
Israel.
Israel?
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
Anything about the temple? I mean, they got to rebuild a temple,
no,
right? They got to get the...
Now, man, here's the deal, though, is that, like, literally, if you're going to be on this bandwagon, I mean, the late 40s and early 50s was your time. This was your time. I mean, at some point, you're just holding on. Now you are becoming the Thessalonians. This is becoming you. You're like, do we miss it? I think we might have missed it. Well, maybe the thing that you thought was going to happen wasn't really the deal, friend. I mean, again, God's time is different. I totally get you. But, I mean, you're starting to stretch it. Maybe you've got to rethink that your theology is not good, as opposed to continuing like, oh, you got to be living under a rock not to notice all these, what, hurricanes that have been going on forever, floods forever, violence amongst people groups that live close to each other, yeah, forever. And so, I mean... What is it that you're seeing that's so unique here, Kinley?
It's because it's happening to them.
Yeah. It's in our neighborhood now, so, yeah.
Hmm. What makes it a super sign if it happened 70 years ago?
I don't know.
Like,
it's long-lasting. It's a long-lasting sign.
Yeah, Israel being reborn. Yeah, you're right, because he says the sense of knowing that we are living in the last days with Israel being reborn as a nation 70 years ago, that's really God's super sign.
And when you say, this is nice to help us parse through.
Okay.
When they say Israel reborn as a nation, what they're saying is governmentally reborn politically.
A bunch of nations said, hey, you can be a nation. They said, okay. Everybody move back home.
Right. The nation of Israel has always existed and never did not exist. God's people of Old Testament lineage have always existed. This is just governmentally forming to be a state called Israel.
Which is so weird to me because, like, granted, God provided a promised land and there was a nation of Israel. And then, if you recall, there were two.
Yeah.
Because they had to split the thing up. But even then, like once they're exiled to under the Assyrians and under Babylon, the prophets still refer to them as Israel. And so, like, the notion of Israel being defined as a government entity or a nation state, you would then have to take task with Amos. I'm like, Amos, you should refer them as something else because technically they're not Israel. But, like, if you follow the definition of Israel, which is these are God's people, and then there's no reason to change that. That's how Paul actually addresses it too. I've heard some that some people talk, especially Messianic Jews, that they're onto this pretty firm about, hey, you're trying to replace Israel with the church. And I think that's a misuse of the term. I think we're trying to consistently use God's definition, consistent biblical definition of Israel, which is God's people. Mm. And if that includes followers of Yahweh who aren't under that ethnic background, I don't see a problem here. And frankly, I think Paul doesn't either. That's his. There is no Jew, no Greek, no man, no woman, mm-hmm. no free, no slave. And so that's where they get tied up is like, oh, well, God's fulfilling a promise here by creating the nation state of Israel. I mean, that more has to do with the Treaty of Versailles than, you know, like, I don't...
And who else did this? You know, the Pharisees?
What?
Like, you can't be the Messiah because, you know...
Because of this.
We want this great nation state to
happen. Right. That's right.
Like, no, I got a different kingdom.
That is a great point.
You don't get it.
Yeah.
And we're doing the same thing a couple thousand years later.
Yeah.
We're still Pharisees and Sadducees running around trying to figure out when this nation, Israel, yeah.
That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, here's the thing. Does this show you any indication that, like, that government is not holy? They are not always honoring choices. Like, if God was, if Jesus, King Jesus was ruling Israel, he would not be behaving in some of the ways the nation of Israel is behaving, regardless of what you think goes on in the Middle East and their notion of how they've set up the government. Let's just be clear that it's not, Jesus is not king there. And so,
it's very much like naming your child Moses and then impressing upon him everything, like how great he is. Yes, yeah. This is Moses. And like, well,
that's right.
I mean, his name is Moses. Yes, that is a proper way to view the nation state of Israel right now.
That's right. I think it's a misunderstanding of even in the pictures of the book of Revelation, when you think about Israel, if you think about it as the nation state of Israel, I think you're missing something. Mm-hmm. I think there is still a sense of elevation to God's people and his lineage. Who bear, but primarily because of what their always job has been to pass responsible for sharing the good news with the rest of the world.
We are the engrafted branch.
That's right.
There still is a branch.
Yeah, yeah. So
they didn't burn the tree or topple that
correct,
statue.
Correct. Yeah. Part of it is, let's see. So he, okay, let's see. Hold on. He had more. I don't want to miss out on him.
This is great.
Kinley also addressed many of the social and political unrest unfolding across the globe, noting that many people feel like the world's in peril.
Once again, the world has been in parable for a while. Parable. Peril.
Did you say parable?
Also true. But like, I get a little fired up about these end times boys because generally the thing that fires off right away is their one-sided view, right? Like, if you look at the disruptions and the wars that have been going on for centuries in the Middle East, in parts of Asia, right, in parts of Europe, Russia will war with anybody all the time, right? Like, these are things that have not touched you because you live in a country that has a gigantic military and founded upon personal freedoms. And so you have not been under the regime of a dictator, an oppressive government, or whatever. And so, like, all the things that are now slightly scraping you, let's say you even do your due diligence and look around the world and go, oh, others are now experiencing this. This must be the deal. Others have been experiencing this for thousands of years. It's only a deal now because it's happening to you.
Yeah.
And that is not how the Bible is written. Ben, continue.
I mean, many people feel like the world's in peril. I'm just reflecting on your point here that, like, it is so narrow, so short-sighted for like, people have felt this every day. In some part of the world, there's some sort of problem. Like, go back to Rwanda, go back to Darfur, go back to Iraq under Hussein regime.
Somalia.
Yeah, I mean, just pick any random country of which there's been some political unrest over the last 50 years. And, like, maybe it felt like the end of the world because their world was being crashed upon them. But you're like, oh, well, we feel like it's the end of the world now because there's people protesting in our streets.
Well, the thing is, even America has that in the history. We just kind of don't think about it.
Yeah.
You know, about people being shot in the 60s, you know, and I mean, we've always had that.
Right.
Politicians having a duel to the death, you know, it's like...
Yeah, we legit
America
did that.
America is filled with it, but right. We're just like, oh, yeah, there was a picture book or something. It's a history book, you know.
Right, but
my neighborhood's good.
Right, that's the point. Like, yeah. It's not realistic to go, oh, they assassinated RFK and some kids got shot at Kent State. The world must be coming to an end. I'm like, ah... Your theology's bad. That's right. Those things stink. But, like, right. It doesn't mean what you think it means. He says, I love this cat. Despite these feelings, end times theology is sometimes overlooked, ignored, or downplayed, even within Christian circles.
I don't think that's true.
I would make the exact opposite case.
Yeah. In fact, I think people are scared to death of it. And they're not overlooking it. They just don't want to talk about it. Because the things that they have heard are creepy and freak them out. there's some kind of harlot coming out of a giant. I always imagine like the 50-foot woman, like the old coming out of the sea, all harlot-y.
It's probably like so many other issues. Like, you know, do you wear a mask or not? Well, there's really smart people saying both things.
Yes.
The same thing with like Revelation and end times eschatology.
Yep.
Really smart people are saying like completely opposite things. Like, and I'm not that guy, so I don't know which one. I don't know.
Yeah.
And that's where a lot. So they just don't. They just
yeah. There's like it. I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm out.
Yeah.
I don't really find that people are overlooking it, ignoring it, or downplaying it. I mean, I would say you, Kinley, are responsible for having done the exact opposite, and I'm very disappointed in you, and likely your family.
Does he have a complaint line?
He says, I love this part. Catch the glaring error. We know that Jesus is coming back, but no one is talking about what happens in between, except for every third book published in Christian circles over the last 60 years.
Or every church service we've ever had. Or every worship song we've ever sang.
Like Jesus said,
all
like
we
in the
do
days
is
of
talk
Noah.
About what to do before Jesus returns. It's the only topic of discussion.
but like, I mean, it's we know that Jesus is coming back, but no one is talking about what happens in between. And Jesus goes, look, nobody knows the day or the hour. And you're like, let's talk about that, though. Here's the thing that I said you're not going to know. Spend all your time focused on that when I've got a whole set of things of which you could, you know, just keep an eye on. Maybe we wouldn't have some of these problems that you think are causing the end of the world.
Maybe that's the reason the workers are few. Because they're sitting there watching an End Times movie all the time. Like, hey, fellas, we got stuff to do. What about the end, though?
Did I miss it?
Get out of there. Put the popcorn down.
He said, God actually tells us what's going to happen, and he tells us how to prepare for it. I mean, he tells you how to prepare for it. He does not tell you what's going to happen. I'm very sorry. You were just wrong.
I mean, he does say the end days will be like the days of Noah, that people will be, you know, basically living life, and then it's over.
Right.
So he does tell us that.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose...
That's not what he's getting to. But.
No, that's right. He's getting it. He's like, there's something special as opposed to, hey, yeah. You're going to be going about your business.
You'll be like getting married and stuff and doing life and, yeah. Oh, then it's going to be over.
Yeah. And then the harvest. Okay, well.
There was a guy that I met going to a church that I used to attend, and he was kind of a goofy feller. And every once in a while, he would never message me on Facebook, but he would message my wife with, like... articles like this.
Nice.
Like end time, like fourth blood moon, so, you know, stuff like that. And like it happened several times where he just like, and she would just message him back, be like, okay. And the last time I did it, I said to her, I want to message him back and send him a link to the book Leaving the Rapture Behind. And a link to the podcast of the class that Ben taught a few years ago on the end times. And she told me not to because I was going to be snide about it. I was going to be all rude to him.
I mean, I don't know how much advice you can take from her. She carries herself in such a way that she feels like she's open to revelation attacks from a random old man.
Yeah, he was kind of a goofy feller. But
I mean, here's the thing. It is a particular thing to me, you know, the fellas like with the big revelation stuff. But I don't know if they believe if they actually believe the things that they're saying, are they doing all the right things, right? Mm. Are they pinging people with this end of time stuff? Is it is the reason that it's hard to swallow is because of you're basically delivering an ultimatum. Not you're not loving people like Jesus loves them. You're basically saying, make a decision because this is going to be bad. Like, yeah. That's the sales pitch.
Like, you better get ready because it's sooner than you think.
Yeah, right.
I
mean, once again, I don't know that it's a terrible... We just, like Dan said, I don't know if it's a terrible thought to have that, like, hey... but it shouldn't be a fearful thought. That's the difference. It's like, if you're approaching it with, like, I don't know if I want Jesus to come back because this is going to be horrible. Right? That should not be your thought of when Jesus comes back. You're right. Like, I can't wait to see how this goes.
Yeah.
Because I think it's going to be great.
Yeah.
And so, like, I think that's the fear selling is that's where it's disingenuous, not God's heart, and also not biblical.
Yeah. Like, I think that you can actually disagree on your interpretation of the end times and Revelation and live the exact same life. like, and keep, and because I've seen there's people I just flat out disagree with theologically, but like they love people, they're trying to communicate good news and trying to make sure that the choice that people make as it relates to Jesus is as best informed as possible because there are consequences to your choices, and you can read Revelation differently and still have that behavior. It's the alternate Revelation reading that also causes people to get into the circus business. And that's what I'm out on. Like, first of all, like the book of Revelation isn't a sideshow. And the way that you describe it doesn't connect people with the real truths of Scripture, even within the book of Revelation, because you're acting like a carnival barker. And so I'm not for that. And two, it seems to empower you in some way or another and make you feel like you're above everybody else because you know things they don't, which makes you an idiot. And then three, it starts to see people in a very in a means that starts to cut off hope. And I'm not for that either. And so it's really your reaction to your interpretation of the Revelation more so than it is the interpretation of Revelation. And the amount of time you spend on it, like to the extent that you, it's just like anything else. If you spend a lot of your time focused on not actually executing the work that of which we are short on laborers to begin with, and you're spending your time doing this jazz and not actually helping people know Jesus, so whatever consequence you think is going to happen doesn't actually occur, well, then, yeah, I think we got a problem.
I think it's a different approach. The people who have his view are really selling fire insurance. You know, the fire is coming, and I can help you out of that. Their heart is right.
Yep.
And generally, other people that have more of a kingdom perspective that says, "Hey, we have a great kingdom. Let's be part of that."
Yeah.
And let's follow this way.
But
of
I
Jesus.
Mean, isn't the second one? Isn't that Jesus's perspective? All he did is talk about the kingdom.
I mean,
he spent almost zero time talking about end times, right? Like, yeah. I mean, he did provide a book of which to address it. But like, once again, like if you look at the life of Jesus Christ, this is not how he spent any of his time, any of it. Right. And so like that's the disconnect. And maybe that's where people have the disconnect with the book of Revelation. If I look at Jesus's life and I look at the life of Paul, and then all of a sudden there's this Revelation book, and it can be read in such a way that you're like, what is this? It looks like the God of the Old Testament took a break for a while and then showed up in Revelation ready to tear it up. And you're like, what? What happened? This congruous story that I thought was going real well, and then all of a sudden here this fire and brimstone Yahweh shows back up, you know, and it almost feels like it's not the same heart, and I think it is because of the way that we take it in, of the way we're reading it, because it is the same Jesus, right?
Yeah.
All right, let's see here. Let's finish this cat out. McKinley was pointed in his warning that Christians must be cautious when it comes to end times theology, declining to make specific predictions, especially when it comes to timetables. The Bible notably tells Christians to avoid date setting. All right, half point for Kinley. We need to be reasoned. We need to be seasoned. We need to be biblical, Kinley said, urging people not to make crazy claims. Classic.
The popular, as he pens a novel.
I mean, yeah, claiming to interview the Antichrist. Or what was it called? Interview with the Antichrist. His hour has come by Jeffrey Kinley. Let's see. Popular author also discussed the rapture. Biblical belief that Christians will be taken up to heaven and spared from the majority of end times events. The rapture typically sparks debate, as not everyone believes the rapture is seen in Scripture. Kinley, who believes the rapture is indeed a biblical construct, said the issue isn't a matter of salvation. It's not a salvation issue, the author said, but it is an important issue. I mean, you can't control one way or the other. I don't know what makes it important. I mean, again, like think of all the stuff that the New Testament is talking about, a lot of which calls you to do something, react in one way or the other. If the rapture is or is not true, I can't control it either way.
Right.
So, I mean, I just don't feel like there's any reason to spend time on it.
I mean, from a perspective of a guy that's following Jesus Christ anyway, isn't the rapture just a procedural move, right? It's something that happens to you, not something that you can do anything about or participate in.
Yeah, sometimes you really go there. It's kind of wild to think. I mean, literally, it is out of our control. At some point, like, it's over, and the world is scorched planet. I mean, this...
Yeah.
Y'all looking at me like, what?
No, yeah.
But it is. It's kind of...
Yeah. Refined by fire, man. Like, it'll be...
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's just... And there's nothing. There's absolutely nothing we can do to stop it, speed it up, slow it down.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just going to happen, maybe in our lifetime. Maybe it'll be later. I mean, that's... I don't know. Sometimes I just sit there and think, whoa. Like... Because all we know is what we see, you know, what we know.
Right. Like, it'll be a total, like, dumbfounding... time. Like, I mean, you won't even know what to do with yourself. He says, go out there. Toward the end of the interview, Kinley discussed the secular cultural changes that are afoot and encouraged Christians to take a cue from early Christian church. While the church was a small and unpopular cohort, the message grew and resonated. Go out there and be the light of Jesus Christ to the world. All right, me and Kinley are on board.
Okay.
If you're looking to understand the end times, consider downloading this theology guide. Do not do that, which explains the in and outs of what the Bible says about the end times.
Well, according to who? Who wrote it?
Pure Flix Insight. Oh, hold on, let me look. By Pure Flix. End times movies and theology guide.
Well, what is Pure Flix?
Like a Netflix, but only Jesus stuff?
Yeah. Or they let you, I think you can watch movies and they take out the nudity and the swear parts.
All the swearing?
Yeah, even the fun stuff, Mike.
They don't let the low levels pass?
Yeah, I like to sing along with those.
Who's going to sing Bad, Bad Leroy Brown with me?
I had to say it. It's in the song.
Yeah. Oh, you can sign up for this. I'm not giving them my email because I don't want them. Anyway. All right.
I got to ask a question. How much damage do you think can it do if people have a strong, we'll call it, misinterpretation of the book of Revelation?
I was in Harbor Freight one day, and there was an old man, and he had a Harbor Freight employee by the ear, and he was going on about stuff similar to this, and he, I've done the research, you gotta go home and look up the Israel.
Israel!
And I have the secret knowledge. I'm just not sure if that Harbor Freight employee walked away from that conversation maybe with the right outlook.
Right, so I'm excited to know the Savior Jesus Christ.
Yeah, so I think it's probably not helpful. Is it damaging? Probably. Is it helpful? No.
Definitely not helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think it can be super damaging. Again, it depends. It depends on who you are. But like, people can get caught up in this stuff, and one, they will spend an inordinate amount of time trying to prove people that they're right. And here's the deal. If you're going to spend any inordinate amount of time doing anything, let's do good news telling. Not, I got my end time stuff right. Because to Dan's point, that you have no control of any of this. Like, if you're completely wrong, the thing that Jesus said is going to happen is going to happen anyway. And like, I could be way off base. And again, Jesus will execute it in whatever way he deems fit. And so regardless of whether I'm right or terribly wrong, God will handle this well.
That's true. What if he comes back and there's like six horses? And what are you going to...
John couldn't see the other two.
You're going to say, no. This is not how I understood it to be.
Oh, you're
this
talking
is
about
a
the
false,
one. Yeah.
This is a false gospel. I only will bow down to a white horse and some kind of fiery eyes, and this is all I will participate in. Right? Like, what are you actually going to do if you interpreted this wrong, you know?
Yeah, so that's the thing, is that, like, it's more, one, if it's a time glutton, two, I think bending too far, just where people tend to end up on this thing, is it starts to bend the message of good news. What should be news of hope to the world becomes attempts to scare you. And because it's not just what Jesus says or what the Bible talks about, you do have to actually talk about it in the way that they talk about it, like proper context with things. Like, there's a reason we have whole letters and whole books. And so that's why I'm not a street sign guy. I'm not a pamphlet guy. Like, context is kind of important. And like, you have to say the words of Jesus with the heart of Jesus. And too many times the end times conversations start focusing on words, one, that I think are poorly interpreted, and two, miss the heart of Jesus completely. And I think that's very detrimental. And frankly, it gives people an easy fodder. Look, that the church is just stupid. Like, they're so dumb, especially with bad guesses and like attempts to say something that you shouldn't know and that you can't possibly know and you're going to claim to know. That's human elevation over God's word. That you actually run a serious consequence with. And so, yeah. Yeah, I think it's dangerous. If you're wrong, like I'm not a rapture guy. Let's say you're a rapture guy. I don't care. I don't think that theology is going to cause you any particular problem. You're just going to be surprised at the end of the world.
Yeah.
If you make that the main thing, then now you have a problem. And I would say the same thing for me. Like, you know, let's say I'm wrong and the rapture thing does happen, I'm like, oh well, we got out early. Great. I mean, it's like cutting school day by at 2 o'clock. What a surprise! So, like,
well, in part, that's a trust in God. His plan is not to torture us. I mean, the plan is good, whatever it is.
Yeah.
However it ends out, we're not going to be like, That was a crappy 1,000 years.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
It's actually, I was having a conversation with somebody this week. They were talking about, you know, if I, just because I don't do what God wants me to do, then he decides he's going to punish me and send me to hell. And I'm like, whoa. Here's the thing. It's like, you're taking factual information and you're twisting it slightly, because what you said is you didn't want to be with him or part of his kingdom. And then he granted that. He gave you what you asked for. And, like, you turned it into, like, punish and like, severe and blah, blah, blah. Like, he said, hey, come over and join me. And you said, I don't want to. God says, okay, I'm sad that you're not going to do that. But, okay, here right. you go.
Yeah.
Like, he gave you what you asked for. And, like, and you turned it around and put these pointed forks on it and made it like you. Like, it's just a way that you're saying it and the way that you're spinning it that, like, that is not God's heart at all. Right? God invited you to a thing and you said, I don't want it. And then you're mad now? You're upset? You're so unfair. You invited me to your birthday party and I didn't show up. And then I can't believe I wasn't at your birthday party. Well, wait a minute. I invited you to the birthday party. Right. You didn't go. Well, this is crap. I mean,
in a limousine.
It really is. It's that straightforward. And like when you put it in that context, because I think that's what people want. People want to be upset at God as if he is a dictator or a shrew or basically dictator. They like that, right? Like an authoritative kingdom that's forcing them to join. And if you don't, there will be consequences. And like, if you look at consequences with a negative connotation, then yeah, that's how you're going to see it. But like everything you're saying is true. Yes, mm-hmm. there are consequences if you do not want to join God's kingdom. He gave you the option. You said no. And there you go. You're in a kingdom without him. And what it's hard for them to realize is like, you've never been in a world where God wasn't being felt. You have no idea what that world is. If you want to call that hell, that's what I'd call it, right? Like to live in a world that does not have a rain on the just and the unjust alike and common grace for people and a reflection of God's character through humanity. You're right. You've never been there and it's probably going to be pretty terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can't eat all the peanut butter at night and then be upset that it's not there in the morning at some faceless person.
Yeah.
That's the consequence of eating all the peanut butter. Mm. All right. Here we go. So we're going to do a quiz. And
is it on Revelation?
Yeah. We'll do a Revelation quiz.
Oh, sweet.
All right. First, just a quick joke. Old Fred has been a faithful Christian and was in the hospital near death. The family called their preacher to stand with him. As the preacher stood next to the bed, old Fred's condition appeared to deteriorate, and he motioned frantically for something to write on. The pastor lovingly handed him a pen and a piece of paper, and old Fred used his last bit of energy to scribble a note, and then he died. The preacher thought it best not to look at the note at that time, so he placed it in his jacket pocket. At the funeral, as he was finishing the message, he realized that he was wearing the same jacket that he was wearing when old Fred died. He said, you know, old Fred handed me a note just before he died. I haven't looked at it, but knowing Fred, I'm sure there's a word of inspiration there for us all. He opened the note and read, hey, you're standing on my oxygen tube.
I like that one. I think that one's grand.
An old preacher was dying. He sent a message for his banker and his lawyer, both church members, to come to his home. When they arrived, they were ushered up to his bedroom. As they entered the room, the preacher held out his hands and motioned for them to sit on each side of the bed. The preacher grasped their hands, sighed contentedly, smiled, and stared at the ceiling. For a time, no one said anything. Both the banker and the lawyer were touched and flattered that the preacher would ask them to be with him during his final moments. They were also puzzled. The preacher had never given them any indication that he particularly liked either of them. They both remembered his many long, uncomfortable sermons about greed, covetousness, and avaricious behavior that made them squirm in their seats. Finally, the banker said, "Preacher, why did you ask us to come?" The old preacher mustered up his strength and said weakly, "Jesus died between two thieves, and that's how I want to go."
Hey, that first one, they cleaned up a little bit.
Oh, really?
Because back in the day, it was like a Chinese man was in bed dying, and he spoke Chinese, and the guy didn't understand it.
Oh.
He handed it to it, like, what's this? You know, translate that. And they probably thought it might have been too close to, like, ooh, just keep the race out of it. So yeah, it was still
right.
It was very effective with the note.
His name probably was not Fred.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, here we go. This quiz titled The Revelation.
I'm ready, Ben. I'm not going to look at the screen.
Question number one. Who wrote the book of Revelation? James, Paul, John, and Peter.
Jesus.
I'm going to vote for John.
John it is.
John.
Two, he wrote the book of Revelation while in exile on what island?
Patmos.
Patmos is correct. Well, I mean, that's our choice. Three, what did Jesus have in his right hand when he first appeared in Revelation?
Peanut butter.
Seven candlesticks, seven stars, a two-edged sword, the word of God, or an empty jar of peanut butter, which he regrettably ate the night before.
Which hand? The right hand?
Yeah.
Than when he first appears.
I think it's the stars. I think he walks among the candlesticks. I think he has the stars in his right hand.
He does walk among the candlesticks, yeah.
I think it's the stars. Yeah. For what church of the book of Revelation does Jesus find no fault with? Laodicea.
Yeah.
Pergamos is not a thing. Philadelphia, Thyatira.
I don't know.
I think it's Philadelphia.
What?
I think it's Philadelphia. Pergamum is where the statue of Zeus is at.
Laodicea was bad news,
obviously,
right?
Bad.
Yeah.
I think it's Philadelphia.
Okay.
Anybody feel strongly? Thyatira, Philadelphia?
I don't think it's Philadelphia.
No, Dan wants to say Thyatira.
I do.
The reason that I'm only on board with thinking it's Thyatira is because I don't even remember that being mentioned. And I only remember the ones that are really getting ribbed.
All right, let's give it Thyatira.
Okay.
How many elders will be seated around the throne in heaven? 4, 12, 24, 40.
24.
It's 24.
Right? It's 24. Yeah. 6.
Is it 12 disciples and the 12 nations of Israel?
Stop saying, looking for reasons to say Israel. That's the complaint line. It's 515-517-0085. 515-517-0085. That's for call or text. Hey, by the way, we did get a nice text this week from someone who sent into the complaint line. And just so you know, Joe, that really made our year, man. We really appreciate it. That meant a whole bunch. Not only that you took the time to do it, but even if half of it was true, that was a real blessing. So thanks for sharing that, man. I appreciate it.
Listen, if you submit stuff to the complaint line, we'll put you in a drawing to win a trip to Israel. All expenses paid by Ben.
I see. How many beasts will be around the throne? 4, 12, 24, 40. I think it's 4.
Beasts before.
4 beasts.
4 beasts. Who will say, holy, 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 Lord God Almighty, which was and is to come?
4.
The elders, the beasts, the lamb, the angels.
Oh.
Is it the angels?
I think it's the elders.
They all say it.
I thought it was the eyed creature. The creature with all the eyes.
Well, that's the beasts.
What are the...
Elders, beasts, lamb, angels. Okay, it's not the lamb. I don't think it's the beasts. I think it's the elders.
I'm going to vote for the angels.
Because the angels, the elders set the crowns down, and then they say it. I think it's the elders.
Okay.
Angels say it, too, though.
I know, yeah.
Yeah, it's probably some of the slight... I'll go with you.
Okay, all right. We'll see. We split the difference. I took Thyatira on your whim. Okay. Let's go with elders on mine. 8. In the right hand of him that sat on the throne was a book with how many seals? 2, 4, 7, 12.
7.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay, 8, 9. Who was worthy to open the book and break the seals?
I don't know. Dan's on some kind of creepy whisper deal over there, too.
Did you say TikTok?
I said the lamb who was slain.
Okay, yeah. The elders, the beast, the lamb, the angels. We'll go with the lamb. 10. As the seals were opened, one by one, how many horses were seen? 4, 12, 24, or a countless number?
4. 4 horses.
Yeah, 4 horses.
2 were unseen. they deliver the mail.
They ride together. All right, here we go. Let's see what we did. Oh, slow internet connection. Oh, no. Number 1, who wrote the book of Revelation? We said John. That is correct. Number 2, who wrote the book? He wrote the book while in exile on what island? We said Patmos. That is correct.
Yes.
Question 3, what did Jesus have in his right hand when he first appeared in Revelation? We said 7 stars. That is correct. Question 4, what church in the book of Revelation does Jesus find no fault with? We said Thyatira. That is incorrect. The answer is Philadelphia.
Daniel.
TikTok.
Well, mine's coming. How many elders will be seated around the throne in heaven? We said 24. That is correct. How many beasts will be around the throne? We said 4. That is correct. Who will say, holy, 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 Lord God Almighty, which was and is to come? I said the elders, and that is incorrect. The answer was the beasts.
The eyed creatures.
Hold on, let's look and see here. And the 4 beasts had each of them 6 wings, and they were full of eyes, and they rest not day and night, saying, holy, holy, holy. Yeah.
Hmm.
Revelation 4.
Apocalyptico.
Hold on. I'm just going to...
Apocalypsis.
All right. Well, okay, hold on. The elders. The elders fall down before him that sat on the throne, and they cast their crowns and say, "Thou art worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power." Yep.
Dang, I was going to let it go.
It was the beasts.
Now you've just those that were slain, the multitude, you know, the...
They don't say anything. They're slain.
They're singing.
Apocalypse.
They're crying out.
The right hand of him that sat on the throne was a book with how many seals? We said 7. That is correct. Who was worthy to open the book and break the seals? We said the Lamb. That is correct. As the seals were opened, one by one, how many horses were seen? We said 4. And that is correct. We answered 8 out of 10 questions correctly for a score of 80%. Quiz was taken 73,919 times since April of 2003, and the average score was 79%.
Oh, man. We're above average.
Yeah, we're right on par, which means people can't listen to us.
We barely scunned that one.
73,000 times?
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah, people love that one. Hold on. Do they have like an end times one? Oh.
No.
Oh, let's do it.
Okay, one.
Israel and
like 0.
That's it.
Israel and prophecy.
No. Say it right.
Israel.
Israel. No one knows what you're talking about.
Oh, fellas, we're gonna be terrible. And then Kinley's gonna take this and he's gonna mock. Hey, there's a Support Israel ad on this site. Support Israel, free flag pin. Request today. Okay, here we go. Number one. What did Ezekiel and Isaiah both prophesy about the agriculture of Israel? 1, that it would be like the Garden of Eden and they would export fruit to the whole world. 2, that it would be able to grow enough crops to stop itself from famine. 3, that there would be a dearth of food in the land and the people would be hungry.
A what?
A dearth.
What's that?
It's a lack.
Makes them hungry.
Oh, okay, got it.
Okay, wait. Yeah. Yeah, lack. That it would be parched, the springs would dry up, and jackals would live there. I'd remember that jackals thing, I feel like.
Yeah.
I think it's that it's the Garden of Eden, and they would feed the world.
Well, and the question is,
What did Ezekiel and Isaiah both prophesy about the agriculture of Israel?
I mean, things were tough times around.
Yeah. I mean, it depends when he was talking to him, but
my vote's going for dearth.
Yeah, I'm going jackals.
All right, 1 for jackals, 1 for dearth. I'm going Garden of Eden, Dan. You want to hear the options again?
Yeah.
All right, 1, that it would be like the Garden of Eden, and they would export fruit to the world, obviously, right? That it would be able to grow enough crops to stop itself from famine. 3, that there would be a dearth of food in the land, and the people would be hungry. 4, that it would be parched, the springs would dry up, and jackals would live there.
Yeah, I'm 4.
You're for the jackals?
Okay, that's 2 votes for jackals,
okay.
Ben.
Jackals it is. 2.
Dearth is on its own.
The prophet Isaiah spoke of the forests in Israel and said that the wood for the temple would be gathered from them. And said that they would be consumed with fire in the last days, and named the varieties of trees that would be planted, and said that the springs would dry up and the forest would die.
Man, I feel like I don't read this part of the Bible.
This is why Kinley wrote the book, and I'm like, no, you don't even know what you're talking about, Israel.
I've never read it. Don't believe anything I say.
Okay, what's going to happen to the forest in Israel? Wood for the temple would be gathered there, consumed with fire in the last days. The varieties of trees that would be planted, or the springs would dry up and the forest would die.
I'm going to go with forest would die. Merely as a guess. I don't have any idea.
Yeah. Part of the curve.
Nathaniel, how are you feeling?
I'll join the bandwagon.
Yep.
All right. I think it's a positive. This is about end time prophecy, which generally is pretty good to Israel. And we've chosen 2 negative items. 3, the prophet Ezekiel foresaw the gathering of the Jews into Israel. He said that the nation would be 10 nations, each with a king. 2, contested for and partly owned by the Philistines. 3, divided into a northern and southern kingdom. Or 4, one nation and no longer divided.
One nation.
I'm one nation. Mike?
Yeah, I don't know.
Because they're already past the 2-nation thing.
Yeah.
One nation.
Okay. Number 4. Oh, boy. On May 14th, 1948, Israel became a nation. Which prophet prophesied that this would happen in the space of one day?
Who's the guy on the TV or the radio that had the billboards? That's not what they're looking for.
And welcome to Give Me Money. Who was it? Open Forum.
It's got an H. Plant it. Camping. Harold Camping.
Yeah, Harold Camping.
Harold Camping.
Can we take our next call, please?
On May 4th.
I listen to that guy all the time. You know how disappointed I was? I mean, I remember I had a job where I got home real late at night, and I used to listen to that guy every night at like 2 a.m. I was listening to Harold Camping. I'm
That's
like,
awesome.
This guy is dry as a piece of toast, but I love him. He knows all the answers, and he, and then to find out he's sucked into some kind of weird deal. I'm like, dang it, Camping.
Actually, I remember listening a few times, and what I like, you could hear him turn the Bible pages, and like, this is classic.
Yeah, he's not typing
he's
it up.
Man.
He don't own the logo software. He's sitting there thumbing through the whole thing. Yeah. I'm like, good. Yeah, I love him.
All right, what do we think? I think it's Amos.
Well, you didn't give us the options.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Which prophet prophesied that this would happen in the space of one day? Amos, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel.
I'm okay. Let's say Amos, but. Can we read that verse later to see if that's what it actually said?
Yeah, we'll see what comes up with an answer.
Okay.
We're going to do terrible. I feel like the worst about this one. We did terrible on another one, but I think this is bound to be the worst. Number 5. 2 Old Testament prophets prophesied that the returning Jews would once again use the ancient shekel for commerce. Who were they? Isaiah and Jeremiah, Amos and Daniel, Zephaniah and Zechariah, Ezekiel and Amos.
Ezekiel and Amos.
Wait a minute. Did they ever go back to using the shekel?
No, I mean, not yet.
Hmm.
I mean, the red cow's not out, and they haven't rebuilt the thing from the cedars of the old Israel's forest.
Okay, I'm going to go with, I don't know.
All right, we don't have shekels right now.
We're going Ezekiel and Amos, unless Nathaniel, you feel strongly.
No, I don't.
Okay. Oh, but are you getting beat up over there, too?
Yeah, I'm just a big, dumb idiot.
Okay, all right. here's the problem. Here's why I'm feeling a lack. I'm feeling a lack of Ezekiel is what I'm feeling. I feel like I'm not taking in enough Ezekiel, or I'm reading it too quick or whatever.
Dan was just freshly through Ezekiel.
Well, I went like the first 3 chapters.
Well,
this is really depressing for the apocalypse right now. So
I mean, we have to bring someone with you to carry your excuses, Dan. Well, you've been freshly through Ezekiel.
Here we go. Dan says, the prophet Ezekiel prophesied that Israel would be attacked from the north, the south, the east, the west. Which one?
Bad things come from the south.
Bad
things
north.
Come from the east.
Oh.
But Nathaniel's in for the north. Dan?
Ezekiel said this?
That's what
Nathaniel
he said.
Comes from the east. There's no way.
He's already in Babylon when he becomes a prophet, so...
Yeah.
And he's talking about Israel being attacked?
Yeah.
So, like, the people back in Jerusalem...
Yeah.
And he's over here.
It feels like it's got to be... Yeah. I mean, I kind of like north, but I think it's east. Yeah.
I love north.
Okay. Nathaniel loves it. We're going with north. We'll see what happens. We're already riding this pogo stick. 7. The Apostle Paul wrote to the Romans concerning Israel that blindness in part has happened to Israel until A. they cease to be wise in their own eyes. B. the great and terrible day of the Lord. C. the Lord gives them beauty for ashes and the oil of joy for mourning. Or D. the fullness of the Gentiles become in.
I don't remember any of this.
It's all King James.
Yeah. Don't worry, the fullness of the Gentiles be coming in. That don't sound right.
Their blindness is in part has happened to Israel until they cease to be wise in their own eyes. Humble themselves. The great and terrible day of the Lord, it gives them beauty for ashes, or the fullness of the Gentiles become in.
I'm going to go with the last one just because I like the hip way they're saying it.
Okay.
Yeah, I got nothing.
Yeah, that seems right. 8. Immediately after he had written the above, what did Paul write concerning Israel?
Oh man.
The northern king of Israel will be saved, as it is written, out of Zion will come the deliverer. He will banish ungodliness from Jacob. B, the southern kingdom of Israel will be saved. As it is written, out of Zion will come the deliverer. He will banish ungodliness from Jacob. C, all Israel will be saved. As it is written, out of Zion will come the deliverer. He will banish ungodliness from Jacob. D, none of Israel will be saved. As it is written, it repenteth me that I have made them.
Who said this?
Paul.
Paul? Paul? Wait a minute. Is this from Hebrews?
No.
Where is it?
Romans. Romans. I think it's C. All Israel will be saved, as it is written. He doesn't divide the kingdoms in Romans.
No.
It's got to be all or none. It repenteth me that I have made them.
Yeah, okay. None.
None. We're going for none?
Yeah.
Boy,
move on. We got to get out of this quiz,
Ben. Who are we to make fun of people who write prophecy books?
Yeah, oh boy.
No, that's
you know what, Kinley? I apologize for every harsh word I used.
Yeah, every swinging Christian come in here and try to make it sound like you crazy. And you know what, sir? Maybe you're not so bad.
Maybe we're just idiots.
Yeah.
My dime store
pony.
Internet theology. There is no rapture. 9. Which one of the gates of the outward sanctuary of the temple is now shut and will remain so until the Lord comes back? Eastern, Western, Northern, Southern.
Western, isn't it?
Western gate?
Western.
Sure. I don't care, Ben. I've lost all interest in this quiz.
Yes, because we're going to lose.
Yeah.
10. The prophets Joel and Amos both prophesied concerning the mountains of Israel that Israel would once again plant vineyards on the mountains. B, the people would live on the tops of the mountains. C, the people would make pilgrimage to the mountains to worship the Lord. Or D, Israel would worship strange idols on the tops of the mountains.
I don't care.
A.
A. I'm with Dan. A.
Oh, man. All right.
I'm done with this quiz, Ben.
Here we go. Oh, there's a lot of red on this page.
Oh, boy.
Okay, one. What did Ezekiel and Isaiah both prophesy about the agriculture of Israel? We went with the jackals. That it would be parched, the springs would dry up, and jackals would live there. That is incorrect.
Yeah.
The correct answer is that it would be like the Garden of Eden, and they would export fruit to the whole world.
Ben, boy, being all positive.
That's got Nathaniel written all over it.
Two, sorry. The prophet Isaiah spoke of the forest in Israel. We said, and said that the springs would dry up and the forest would die. That is incorrect. The correct answer is, and named the varieties of trees that would be planted.
Wow, you're right. They're all positive.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, that was my other thought.
Question three. The prophet Ezekiel foresaw the gathering of the Jews into Israel. He said the nation would be, we said, one nation and no longer divided. That is correct.
Right on. Yes.
Number four. On May 14th, Israel became a nation. Which prophet prophesied that this would happen in the space of one day? We said Amos. That is incorrect.
Okay.
Correct answer was Isaiah. Here we go. Isaiah 66:8. Let's go with the ASV. Who hath heard such a thing? Who hath seen such things? Shall a land be born in one day? Shall a nation be brought forth at once? For as soon as Zion travailed, she brought forth her children. Yep. That's, I don't, nope.
That's just 1948.
That's not what that's getting on at all, sir. I reject our losing of points in that arena.
Email him.
No way. I think he'll put me on a list. Question five. Two Old Testament prophets prophesied that the returning Jews would once again use the ancient shekel for commerce. Who were they? We said Ezekiel and Amos, pulling a rabbit out of hat. That was correct.
I mean, they could reprint the shekel? Or do they keep the old shekels?
Yeah, ancient shekel. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Number six. The prophet Ezekiel prophesied that Israel would be attacked from, we said, the north. That is correct.
Dang, nice.
Question seven. The Apostle Paul wrote to the Romans concerning Israel that blindness in part has happened to Israel until, we said, the fullness of the Gentiles be come in. That was correct.
Yeah, nailed it.
Number eight. Immediately after he had written the above, what did Paul write concerning Israel? We said they're not to be saved at all. Yeah. As is written, it repenteth me that I have made them. That is incorrect. The correct answer is all Israel will be saved. As is written, out of Zion will come the deliverer. He will banish ungodliness from Jacob. Number nine.
Once again, Zion is what?
Mount. It's the mountain.
Yeah, I mean,
it refers to Israel.
Israel. So once again, if we're going back to our end times stuff, when we're talking about someone will come out of the Mount Zion or out of Israel, then how are we to interpret that?
I think it's Jesus.
Well, I mean, I assume it's Jesus, but like,
yeah, he came out of the nation of Israel.
That's it.
He's the deliverer.
Just
capital
a real
D.
Flowery way of saying it.
He banished ungodliness from Jacob, yeah. Israel again.
Not popping out of Mount Zion like a jack in the box.
No.
All right.
Number nine. Which
it's
one
hard to suss this stuff out, Ben.
Yeah, I understand. Which one of the gates of the outward sanctuary of the temple is now shut and will remain so until the Lord comes? We said Western Gate. That is incorrect. The correct answer is Eastern Gate.
Yeah. Dang. I was mumbling that to myself as I said West.
Question 10. The prophets Joel and Amos both prophesied concerning the mountains of Israel that we said Israel would once again plant vineyards on the mountains. That is correct. Oh, you answered a total of 5 out of 10 questions correctly for a score of 50%. Quiz has been taken 23,000 times since 2006, and the average score for the quiz, 50%.
Hmm.
We're batting for the course again. All right, Mike. Bring us out of here.
Here we go.
We've embarrassed ourselves.
Dear, live from the path. My fiance, quotes Jay, has a 14-year-old daughter who has been homeschooling during the quarantine, and she refuses to put pants on.
Yes.
When we ask her to, she gets upset. She isn't built like the average teenager. She's 5'10 and weighs 200 pounds.
I see.
So it's like seeing a grown woman in her underpants. I think it's inappropriate for a young woman her age to be unwilling to dress herself fully. And I don't like seeing her like that every time I go to their house. Jay doesn't notice. He says it doesn't bother him. He doesn't mind when I ask her to put shorts on. I don't feel it's my place at this point to dictate what she wears, but I'm uncomfortable. I don't know if I'm crossing a line or if it's normal to feel this way. Help.
I mean, I don't find it outlandish to say put some pants on.
Ah, okay. So, just to put this in slight perspective, right? Like, dads of girls.
Look, yep.
I mean, there gets to be a certain age that, like, look, you come into the common areas of the house, you're fully dressed. That's just kind of the deal,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
up that's until, usually self-imposed.
Right, yeah. Self-imposed, right? Yeah. They will do this on their
look
own.
Look at me.
But, I mean, up until that point, like, a half-dressed daughter of mine is not the same as a half-dressed 14-year-old girl I don't know. That's different, right? Like, it just is. It's just different. And so, like, 14 is probably... I don't care about her size. I don't have anything to do with it. It has to do with the fact that it's not your kid. And you haven't been around her every day for the last 14 years. And you're right. Seeing a half-dressed anything, you're like, hey, man, that's too much.
Just doesn't seem right.
Right. So, not to say that, like, once again, I think she'll impose this on her own.
But she's not.
Well, I mean, I don't know. What I mean,
I think she'll self-regulate. She doesn't.
Well, yeah. She's not 27.
I mean, is that the line?
I don't know what the line is.
Here's the deal: I'm more concerned that you. It sounds like the both of you, like, she said we, but like if you said, hey, we'd appreciate it if you put some pants on, and she goes, no, I'm not going to put pants on. I'm more concerned about that than in the fact that she's not wearing any pants.
Was she saying no? I missed that.
The kids say no, yeah.
Yeah, kids say she's not going
to
do it.
Because I have to admit, at first I was going to say, first of all, stop living together. And then I realized they weren't. So then I had to repent. And so I missed a couple lines.
I mean, here's the thing. I haven't quite, my kids aren't quite old enough for this to be a deal yet. And they've already self-regulated, right? But like, the rule of my house always has been, your room is your room. You do whatever you want in there. If you're going to be half undressed, then you shut the door, right? But, like, if you're going to come to the common areas of the house, you be presentable as if anybody's going to stop by because you're in the common area of the house. And I think that's fair. It gives you freedom to whatever, do whatever you want, sleep however you want, whatever. But anytime that there's a chance someone's going to come rolling in, especially me, people need to have some clothes on, and that's the deal.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know. I feel like you're juggling with becoming part of a new situation, and this particular thing, because you're a woman, right? Like, I don't know. Is she trying to say that, like, maybe Jay as a dad is having a hard time figuring out how to address this right, and so she's having a hard time helping him? If you're just uncomfortable as another woman, I don't know what your deal is, right? Yeah. Like, I just don't see that as being an actual problem.
I'm guessing she probably is realizing that he's a single dad with a teenage girl, and the last person probably to teach social skills to a teenage girl is a single dad.
See, I agree. Know? If she'd have written it that way, true, maybe this would make more sense to me. But it sounds like you're offended that she's heavy to me. Like,
right, she brought,
like,
that up.
That sounds, and you don't want to see that. And that if that's where your heart is, you're not coming at it from near the right place. And so,
That part was weird.
That part was straight up weird.
Yeah.
And ridiculous, frankly. So I'm having a hard time sussing out where you're at here. I think bottom line goes is, like, as much grace as I'd like to give this guy and have grown up with her, with his daughter, 14 is plenty old enough to set some ground rules that, like, look, you want to sit around no pants on, in your bed, under your covers, in your movie watching time, whatever, I don't care, mm-hmm, right? But, like, you come out your room, it's common area time, I put pants on, you put pants on. That's the deal.
That's fair.
We'll figure out a way to move forward here, you know?
Nathaniel?
Yeah, I think I agree with putting pants on for one, and
time for pants
for two. That it's a problem that their 14-year-old daughter, or at least his 14-year-old daughter, is just gonna be like, no way, I ain't putting no pants on, simply because you told me to.
And that's probably the whole boundary thing.
Yeah.
You're not my mom.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, it probably could be eat your Jell-O. I'm not gonna eat my Jell-O.
Sure.
Maybe. I'm just... Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like there's a lot of dynamics, we'll say, going on in the house.
The blended family thing can be tough.
Right. And like, this pants-on thing, I think you probably... I don't know. There's hills to die on. This one, I think the dad's got to work through. I mean, you coming in into her life and going to be her co-parent at the age of 14, it's impossible. This is not going to go well. It's just not. You know, and you can, I mean, she's going through enough changes as it is now to deal with a different parental situation, someone having authority over her when people from the age of 13 to 17, if there's anything they hate more than authority, it's authority. Like, I just hate authority. And so, like, any attempt to guide, push, suggest, lightly, encourage is not going to be taken very well, especially from you. And so I think you might have to lower your expectations a little bit. Figure out how you can politically and comfortably try to help Jay be the parent here at least bring him other perspectives, maybe. Because, like, as a dad, I'd be like, look, I don't know what I'm doing here. I don't know how to raise a teenage daughter, especially by myself. Maybe this pants thing is regular. Maybe it ain't. I don't know. You know, I'd let it go, probably. You know, I got enough to worry about, try to figure out how to do this thing by myself. And so, yeah, it's a little bit more complicated than you're making it, but I feel like your heart's coming from a weird place. And so I think you probably better straighten that out before we move much further on.
You don't think that anything needs to be, like, talked about with this girl about, you know, what's going on that you feel it's okay to be pantsless around the...
I mean, some people are free-spirited.
I mean, I guess, but...
I have one kid that I think would never, ever go pantsless anywhere. And I have another kid that is like, I mean, if you didn't strap it to her, she'd fly him off and run through the hills. Like, it's just her personality. She don't care.
Yeah, no, yeah. Actually, I have that exact same setup, yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, here's the thing. It's like, as a dude, and especially as an older man, you're like, girls in their underwear, right? It's a certain thing for you. To girls, it ain't. It's just like, you know, I mean, this is the concept, it blows my mind, right? Like, girls will dress and undress in front of each other, no problem. I won't go undressing with a dude. I just won't. It's just not where I'm at, you know? And so, like, I think it's just a different thing. And, like, she needs to wear the pants. And, like, that's what I always told the girls is, like, look, as soon as they got to be about 5, when I thought they could understand it, I basically said, look, there is a man living in your house, and, like, there's some stuff that, like, after a certain age, it's just for ladies or your husband, and that's it. And so, like, when you're in the areas of the house that I frequent, it's pants on. It's clothes time. That's just the deal. And I'll remind you a couple times, but it really needs to happen that way. That's the way we protect the things that God gave us. And, like... obviously, they missed that conversation at her house, probably a little late now.
Yeah.
So, you know, you just got to figure out how to navigate it and use it as a encouragement, not as a rule, I would guess. Okay, Secular says, your fiancé is Oklahoma with his daughter's attire in their home. If your engagement to Jay leads to marriage, you will be living there permanently. So your opinion should be respected. Someone has to have, quotes, the talk with your fiancé's daughter about the fact that she's no longer a child. She has become a young woman. The person to do that is her father. The message would be better coming from him because you're not her parent, and it may help you avoid being perceived as the, quotes, wicked stepmother to be.
Yeah.
Can't disagree with that.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you oversimplified it. I think there's I don't think that's going to go as well as you're saying.
Well, I mean, that goes back to the other point, which is, like, if the dad went up and said, Hey, look, there's other people in the house. It just makes people, whether right, wrong, or indifferent, it makes people uncomfortable to have you walking around in your underpants. So when other people are over, put your pants on. Like, that can't be a bad thing.
Right.
And so, like, I don't think that's a problem at all. And I wouldn't sweat two things about asking my kid to put her pants on. And if she was upset about that, that's a different conversation. And maybe it gets to the root of something else that's going on that you need to talk about. But, like, it's not unreasonable to be, look, put some pants on. It's not even a reasonable, like, 14's irrelevant. I could have a 7-year-old. Actually, I had a kid that, as soon as she was 8, she was prone to be walking around without pants on. Just wanted to. And I'm like, dude, first of all, we barely close the curtains at our house. You gotta have pants on. And it's not, she's old enough to understand and do it if I asked her to do something. And I have a pretty good reason for it. And so, yeah, I don't think the 14-year-old has any ground to be like, no, I refuse to wear pants.
I agree. I think it's just a teenage angst. I think they just don't like authority, and they're just picking this issue to roll. Okay, ready?
One more.
Yeah, well, one. Dear, well, I don't know if I want to use this one, Ben.
We spent all our time on that crappy prophecy quiz.
That was a mistake. Oh, no, we're not going to do that one. We're not going to do that one. Nope. I'm afraid of it. Okay, hold on, here we go. Some kind of campaign. Here we go. Dear Life from the Past. My oldest brother is running for a state office.
Yes.
Unlike me, he does not like animals.
Right.
Wow. I should have screened this better. He has, like, quotes, hauled litters of puppies off and shot at cats. In addition, he refuses to help our elderly parents. Family or not, I don't want someone to be a leader in our state capital who exhibits such poor moral and unethical behavior.
Ooh.
Wow. He has been married several times, and I know for a fact he cheated on one of his wives. I avoid attending his fundraisers and asking for votes, but other family members keep telling me that blood is thicker than water and that I, quotes, must vote for him regardless of his behavior. Of course, behind the curtain, I can vote for whoever I want, but should I cave to the pressure to show up in support of him at public events? Even my husband said I should donate money to his campaign because he is family. What's your opinion?
No.
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 What?
Wait a minute.
Think of the puppies.
He cheats on his wife. Wives. Yeah. Beats puppies and shoots cats.
He just, she does not have to support Mr. Kennedy.
Yeah, yo, this guy was interviewed by the guy from the Antichrist book earlier. He's like, I see that you walk the earth now, cat shooter. I mean, you could not have painted this man in a worse light.
What kind of cats? Am I? Like stray cats? Because I could see that a little bit.
Was it kittens?
It didn't say.
It didn't say.
It didn't say the age of the cats.
Yeah. That's terrible. You can't run for office either.
I know.
I know. I've already given into it.
I'm unqualified.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this could not be a worse. I mean, isn't the media just going to catch up with him at some point? Or is this some, what do you say, like a state office?
State office.
State office.
He's probably going to be the auditor. No one cares, right? It's one of those things you get on the vote ticket and you're like, the state auditor? Yeah, I don't know, Jeff Freely. Yeah, I don't know. Tom seems nice. Check. Yeah.
Four cats came in, no cats came out.
I mean, this guy's this brutal. How do more people not know about this feller?
I don't know. I mean, can you really leave it that secretive life of blowing away cats?
Yeah.
I mean, this had to happen in his childhood, right? Like, she is really painting the most horrendous picture of this guy. I this whole thing seems weird to me. But I mean, here's the long answer, which is now the short answer. No. Yeah. You don't have to do that, right? It's just like we were talking with the when we were talking about the protest last week. We will help you do good things. I will not help you do bad things, right? And so, like, are you forced to support your brother publicly when at home he's the worst? No,
no,
no. Now you don't have to go out of your way to trash him, but like if pertinent information should be known or someone asks you, I don't see any reason to lie. But
does your brother ever
kill cats?
Shoot a cat?
Boy, it's a good thing you brought that up. Here's the deal.
Haul puppies off like Santa Claus and then dump them in the river?
Yeah. He's like the duck hunt of cats. he just has right at them. Yeah, I don't know. I don't see any reason to... What would be a situation where I would think otherwise?
I had a pal who, his landlord, used to be an elder at a church. And they had to have a talking with this landlord because he went into somebody's house that he owned the house, and there was a no pet rule, and he found some dogs in there, and apparently he did away with the dogs.
Oh,
and so I think they had a I don't know what eventually ended up, whether he was not an elder anymore. But I know at least the church talked to him. And so I feel like and I don't think the people who went to this, who lived in this house weren't even like a member of the church. I think they were just like, oh, this is going on.
Oh, man.
Wow.
And let people know.
What kind of, I mean, does that disqualify you from eldership?
Yeah, Dan, like you heard that. Would you be like, you know what? Maybe you're not the right type of cat here.
Well, the story is that he took the dog and he threw it up against the door.
Okay, that's worse.
And so like, if someone came to you and said, hey, this guy, he did this.
Yeah. That.
That's not a patient, man.
Right. That just throws all kinds of red flags up.
Yeah. Yeah. He's out. Yeah. No doubt.
What the heck ever? I don't know how people make the eldership.
I mean, we're scraping the barrel. It's hard to find dudes.
It really is hard to find dudes.
I mean, actually, if you were to follow even remotely strictly some of the criteria he puts out, I mean, you just... This little piggy went to market, and this little piggy went home, and that's about all you got.
Yeah.
And usually the ones who really want it are the ones who are smashing puppies against doors.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
I need this. What were we just talking about?
I deserve to lead.
What were we just talking about? A church that had the chairs lined up for the elders to sit in.
Yeah, I was telling you. That was another tale I was spinning the other day.
Yeah.
Of the elders would sit up on the stage behind the preacher trying to not fall asleep and look more holy than the other guy sitting across the stage.
That's old school church right there.
Boy, I feel like that would be so awkward. I'd make faces at him.
Yeah.
Hey, man, I know you're not paying attention.
Dan, did you ever, like, intern or anything at a church like that?
We had two big chairs that would come up and sit at for communion, my very first church. They were, like, good guys, but still it was kind of like... Yeah,
this
I don't
is weird.
Need to be doing that.
Did you talk him out of it?
It is so long ago. I honestly don't remember. I just remember that I remember that I never experienced that again, and I can't remember how I just joke about the first time or in a first church, or I really don't remember.
Hmm.
Yeah, I can tell you the last 30 years of my life, that has not
this
been
has not part. Occurred.
Hmm. What was the question? Oh, yeah. Yeah, do I have to support this man publicly?
Yeah.
Our simple answer was no, right? Absolutely
right.
Not.
Right.
Okay, Segular says, if you do not support a candidate, keep your checkbook closed. And as to showing up to endorse your brother's run for office, continue to refrain and cross your fingers that your absence won't be noticed amidst all the excitement. If your husband wants to donate to your morally degenerate brother's campaign, it is his choice. And he has a right to, just as you have a right to yours. P.S. Anyone who would shoot at a defenseless animal and neglect his aged parents... really doesn't belong in any office.
Oh, that's right. I forgot he was an elder abuser.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, that solved the world problem. You've been listening to Live from the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us today. We really do appreciate it. Hey, like, I would say 70% chance that we're not around next week for multiple reasons. But we look forward to be back with you, I don't know, sometime in the near term after that. In the meantime, hook up on the complaint line, 515-517-0085. That's talk or text. We'd love to hear from you. And, yeah, in the meantime, be faithful in means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Path. Don't do that.
I already did.
Live from the Path.
You've been listening to
Live from the Path.
Live from the Path.
Live from the Path.